it's interesting that all of us have to take those chances once in a while. Even with the spiritual teachings, like in the church, I'll give you my experience as I grew up. I started going to the Mormon church when I was about 13, got very interested in the teachings. But then what you learn in the Mormon church, and this is similar to the other churches, is you learn that if you betray the rules, that, in the regular Christian church you go to hell, but in the Mormon church you go to some place that sounds even a lot worse than hell, because the church teaches about the apostates that went against Joseph Smith and even forwarded, partially responsible for his murder. These guys are just like what they call sons of perdition. And it's written of the sons of perdition. It says the height, the width, the breadth of their punishment and torment no man knows, and except unto them that it is revealed. In other words, they will be punished so greatly with the devil and his angels for eternity, and their worm dieth not, it says. The worm of their torment dieth not. And so, boy, the description is painted in pictures that just terrifies you. You think the worst thing you can think of is, boy, I certainly don't want to be a son of perdition. And to be a son of perdition, you got to pretty much be an apostate from the Mormon church. So that's something that no Mormon ever wants to be. So when I found out the Mormon church was not right in certain areas, and I was finally faced with a choice. Well, Curtis actually forced it on me because I taught him some of my teachings, and he went and spread them around. He got called in to be for a trial, and he asked me to come testify at his trial. And so I said, well, if I testify at your trial, then I'm probably going to be excommunicated too. And then, of course, the thought brushes by your mind. You think, well, the church is right and I'm wrong. I could be a son of perdition. Suffer with the devil and his angels for eternity, and the torment is so bad that Joseph Smith couldn't even write how bad it was.
Wow.
That sounds pretty bad. And so anyway, they threw Curtis out, and then they eventually had my trial, and the day before my trial, that thought, you have a hard time getting that thought out of your mind. And so I thought, well, if I'm ever divinely careless, I guess this is it. But what's interesting was the day before my trial, I had a spiritual confirmation that I was on the right path and that I was not going to be a son of perdition. And that spiritual confirmation I got helped me to set things straight in my mind and have the right perspective, so I wasn't concerned about the trial that I eventually had. Now, the same thing with regular Christians. They're taught that if they, deviate from the faith, that they will go to hell and burn forever or else be extinguished completely or something like that. And that scares the dickens out of them too. So for the regular religious people, they have to be divinely careless to break out of the religious thought form and even explore things like reincarnation or the fact that that Christ means something more than just the man Jesus, or a lot of these things, or maybe the atonement is different than what you've been taught in Sunday school. To explore all these things and maybe risk going to hell if the authorities are right, that's a divine carelessness. And time and time again, I've taught people that say, boy, what you teach really sounds right, but if you're right, then I'm going to get another chance. I can come back and be reincarnated and get a whole new chance. But if you're wrong, and if the church is right, well, then I'm going to burn in hell. So I might as well play it safe, because I can play it safe, and if you're right, I'll just be reincarnated and get another chance. So So the guy is not being divinely careless. He's being emotionally safe is what he's being. You know. And he needs to be divinely careless and take some chances. Matter of fact, the gods, the great lives up there, when they see somebody risking everything, risking their eternal salvation for truth, they think, ah, that's somebody we can work with. But when they see somebody just playing it safe, it's the opposite. They'll think, yeah, that guy thinks he has another chance, but he's going to waste a lot of time. You know, that other chance, he may come back and blow that too. It may take him 50 lifetimes to make up for this stupid decision he just made, just because he wants to play it safe.
So, yeah. Do you, that odd phrase, their worm dieth not, I wondered what in the heck that means. Do you
like in the old days, the worst thing that could happen to somebody is if they got some type of infection and was eaten by worms. And so if you're eaten by worms for eternity and the worm doesn't die, then that's the worst thing, you know, past generations could think of happening to them.
Sounds like that guy that Hercules saved, where the birds kept eating his liver.
Yeah, right. Prometheus.
Yeah.
Yeah, had his liver eaten, and then he was healed, and then they ate it again the next day.
So, in other words, it's just a phrase that kind of like hellfire. It's a scary phrase.
Right.
Describing hell.
Well, like during the Middle Ages, they had a heck of a time. You read about a handful of people to being divinely careless, you know, defying the authorities, and then they were burned at the stake, or they were impaled, or what they would do, they would cook them, and then when they just about died, they would let them off the fire, heal them up for a few days, and then cook them some more, and their cruelty just defied the imagination. It was amazing.
Disemboweling in front of us.
I remember one guy I read about that was disemboweled. They disemboweled this guy while he's still alive, and they pulled his heart out, and this guy was holding this guy's heart in his hand. And as he did this, that guy says, "That's Jesus' heart you're holding." He had the presence of mind to say that about his own heart as that guy was holding in front of him. So I'd like to see what happened in the next world with that guy compared to the guy that took his heart out. It would be interesting to see how both of them wound up.
So that's, inasmuch as you've done this unto the least of these, my brother, you've done it unto me.
Yeah. But when you read about what they did during the Middle Ages, it was very disturbing. Or the Roman Empire, too, what they did to persecute people. Okay, probably got time for one more. Look over and pick. What's that?
The principle behind white magic, and how does it work?
Okay. We had a class on this, and I'll post it soon, but we probably got just enough time to cover it. I'll cover it briefly. There's two types of magic. There's white magic and black magic. Black magic is magical results that materialize on the physical plane. Whereas white magic is the magical work of the soul. The white Jesus was the greatest of all white magicians that we have on record, because he participated in the magical work of the soul. And the magical work of the soul works in the service of others, group work, is unselfish, and works through people's free will and the spirit. The dark magicians work by taking away free will. They are not concerned about free will at all. And they work on different types of formulas that produce quick results. Now, DK says this about the black magicians, and the fact that he says that, and Hitler, for instance, he was surrounded with black magicians. And he talked about them by saying that they can produce results more quickly, but the white magicians produce more permanent results, and it takes longer. And he pointed out the difference between the workings of Hitler and his group, and then Churchill and FDR and the people they worked with. They worked with more consensus and free will. and Hitler work by dictating how things have to be. And so Hitler, when he started his movement, he made tremendous progress very quickly, because he used a lot of magical things to control people on the physical plane. He studied, for instance, how to control people in groups. He did it. He studied the symbology. Even the Nazi symbol was something devised to influence the minds of men. And instead of going counterclockwise, like the spiritual symbol that the Brotherhood has sometimes used, he goes clockwise, which is the symbol of descent into matter instead of progression into spirit. Now, unfortunately, we can't use the swastika, the spiritual side of the swastika, because no matter anything that looks anything like a swastika will scare everybody to death. So Hitler did the disservice of making the swastika a symbol nobody can use, unless you're a neo-Nazi or something. But his swastika went in the direction of from spirit to matter rather than matter to spirit, which is what the ancient swastikas, ancient brotherhoods that use a swastika used, was the one going the other direction. And he Hitler studied and he worked through his people as to how to control people using hypnotic techniques with crowds. And you'll find when you watch how he controlled his crowds, the lighting was a certain way, the lighting was kind of dimmed down, and the cadence of the speakers spoke in certain, we could call frequencies, rhythms to control the groups, and the whole crowds were almost hypnotized. And people that were against Hitler turned out to be for him. And he is like, unlike Stalin and Mao and other dictators where a lot of people hated him, Hitler's people loved him, and that's what made him so dangerous. He was dangerous because the German people were so hypnotized by him through black magic. I'd say about 80% of the Germans thought he was a great guy and a tremendous leader. He was only elected with about a third of the vote, and then he wasn't really elected, but when the election happened, there was a whole bunch of political candidates, a whole bunch of parties. One reason I'm against a whole bunch of parties in this country, because somebody like Hitler could get elected that way. But anyway, he only got about a third of the vote, so he wasn't elected by democracy. Nobody got enough votes to become the chancellor, so Hitler wound up being appointed. So he was an appointed leader rather than an elected leader. And that's about the only way somebody like him can really get in power. But he quickly won the people over, because he did. He either imprisoned or tortured anyone that disagreed with him, and then people that agreed with him, he used hypnotic and black magic techniques to influence and control them, so that when he gave his speeches, the audience was sincerely moved. I mean, they were. If you watch these pictures of the audiences that he mesmerized, I mean, they weren't pretending like in North Korea. Everybody pretends to love their dear leader. You know, the Germans weren't pretending. They really liked him, and they cheered him on until, you know, the war started going sour, and then a lot of people started turning on him.